Members, we will call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. We now have a quorum. So, Representative Davids, did you get a chance to look at the minutes from our last meeting?
I would like to move the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Davids moves the minutes. Any questions, comments, or concerns? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the Representative Davids moved approval of the minutes, I think, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Davids. We will jump right into it. Representative Sander or Representative O'Driscoll, go ahead. Go ahead and move your bill, and we'll get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 953 before the committee, and to be referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
Okay, sounds good. Tell us what we need to know.
Well, Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you and the committee, I have an A1 amendment that I'd like to offer. It's an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like it
today. That is all right. Members have the A1 amendment in their packets, I believe. Representative O'Driscoll offers the A1 amendment. All those in favor of the amendment getting the bill in the shape the author liked, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you for the no vote. Representative O'Driscoll, your bill is now in the shape that you want. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The substance of House File 953 deals with mortgage foreclosure by advertisement publication requirements. In the state of Minnesota, there had been some ambiguity and questions as to how publications would take place. Not necessarily what's included in the publications, that's pretty clear in statute. Not necessarily the number of times it needs to be published in order to be able to meet the foreclosure by advertisement requirements, and that's very clear in statute. But the question became the newspaper and where it's domiciled or is able to do business. And so what this does is it clarifies for all interested parties. The Bar Association had some concerns, and that's why we put the A1 amendment on that provided clarification as to where the newspapers would be domiciled for those publication purposes and where they would be able to do business. And the Mortgage Bankers Association is comfortable, along with the other interested parties, for the language that we're looking at putting in into a statute. As a matter of fact, we had similar provisions back during the territorial days of the state of Minnesota, and they had been kind of changed, and we're going to go back to the good old days of the way that we used to do it with the county newspaper. So, Mr. Chair, if there aren't any questions, Mr. Chair, if there are questions, I stand for them this afternoon.
Representative Swidzinski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative O'Driscoll, just kind of looking at your amendment and from a newspaper's perspective, with this, you know, obviously around the Capitol, we've got politics in Minnesota. That newspaper has a lot of these mortgage foreclosure notices in there. How will that affect that relationship? And, I mean, or will it be in more of a commonly read news thing?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swidzinski, you're right in a publication that people are very familiar with around the Capitol. That is the publication that would be domiciled or be in an adjacent county that those foreclosures would be posted in. That's what this language does, is clarifies to make sure that they would continue to be able to do that, or in your part of the state where there may not be a paper that's in the county that you reside in, but there's an adjacent county, to make sure that that's a permissible way to be able to make those publications. It simply provides clarification in state law.
And Representative O'Driscoll, do you have Mr. Anfinson here? Does he want to come up and make
Mr.
a couple Anfinson of
is here,
remarks?
And so is Ms. Rice. If our questions are needed by the committee, neither one of them had said that they specifically would be needed to testify today, but wanted to make sure that we knew that they were aware of committee members or others had questions.
Okay. They are, maybe we'll get to that in a second. They're always both welcome to come up if they would like to. It seems to be going swimmingly well. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll. So the law states that if it's located in a county where the mortgage premises, but if there isn't a paper in that county, it allows for an adjacent county. Do we know if there's any counties in Minnesota that are adjacent by counties that don't have papers as well?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, that's a very, very good question. As the amendment talks about having, and I think you're referring specifically to the language that says qualified newspaper, and that is known, has a known office of issuance in the county that it's located. If you go into Minnesota Statute 331A.02, There's a subdivision that defines what is a qualified paper, and the last portion of that says, or an adjacent county to that county that has an official newspaper. So we didn't necessarily have all 87 counties that would have had a newspaper domiciled in there. So for example, where I come from, the St. Cloud area, Stearns, Sherburn, and Benton County all converge in one spot. The St. Cloud Times is a newspaper that would be an official newspaper that would be in Stearns County, but because they're contiguous to Sherburn and Benton County, those counties would be able to use that newspaper to post their foreclosure notices and default notices under Minnesota Mortgage Default Law.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Dean, does that answer your question?
Mr. Chair, yeah, it answers my question, but I still don't know if there's a county that's isolated around with counties around it that don't have a newspaper.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, there was until about 20 years ago when we put the adjacent county language in statute. I was referring to that 331A.02 that clarified that if you didn't have one, you could use an adjacent county, and that solved all the problems for the publication requirements.
Representative O'Driscoll, maybe this would be a good time to get Mr. Anfinson up here from the newspapers, and maybe he has a more clarity to that question.
Certainly.
Welcome, sir. Please state your name for the record and start whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mark Anfinson, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. There is one county in the state, basically, that has no newspaper in it, which I believe is Traverse County, on the western central border of the state. I could be wrong. It's near there. But there is no county in the state that is not bordered by counties with newspapers in them.
Thank you, sir. And thank you for the answer
on
to the question.
No.
If you have more that you want to add to the bill, feel free.
No, I respect the committee's time, and unless there are questions, I don't need to testify.
Not seeing any other questions. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to testify for or against this bill? Not seeing anyone rushing down. Representative O'Driscoll will give you the last word.
Thank you. Members, I appreciate your support, and I know that the industry does as well. And so, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 953 be referred to the Committee on Civil Law as amended.
That sounds good. Representative O'Driscoll renews his motion that House File 953, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee.
Representative O'Driscoll, you did a very nice job of starting us out in a very timely fashion today. Let's see who's next. Representative Loon, let's see if we can continue that same trend. Representative Loon, if you want to go ahead and move your bill and start whenever you're ready.
I will. Mr. Chair, I would move House File 328 to be re-referred to the Committee on, I believe, Government Operations. And with that, I do have an amendment, a delete all amendment, which I believe is in everyone's packets. Hope is in everyone's packets. Yes.
You're going to go ahead and move the delete all amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Loon moves the delete all amendment. Seeing no quick questions about that, we'll vote on this to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be, and then we'll proceed. It is the delete all is the A15 amendment, in case anyone was wondering. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Seeing, hearing none, the motion passes. The motion is approved. Representative Loon, your bill is now in the shape you'd like. Please
yes.
Proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I wanted to talk with the author's amendment on it first because, you know, this bill has been a subject, I think, of some great bipartisan work, but also a lot of discussions and, you know, cooperative conversations with the Department of Commerce, and I'm sure they'll have some things to say about it. So I don't know if they're all in agreement with where we're going, but I came to learn about this concept actually this summer, and met one of the gentlemen who will be coming to testify today, and was interested in it, and he came to be interested in this whole concept around just a love of craft beer, honestly. Crowdfunding is something that's been around for a while, but it's generally been used almost as a way to raise funds, almost from a donation impact. You can give to something, a cause or a purpose, and maybe receive a T-shirt or a CD or something. But using this internet fundraising as a possible source of capital for a small business is something that I think has very exciting potential for our state. The bill that you're going to see today is similar to legislation that's already been passed in 14 other states, and other states are looking at it. So it's all stemming from legislation at the federal level, the Jobs Act of 2012. Unfortunately, the SEC is yet to propose rules on doing this on an interstate basis. So now states are moving on in their own right to allow businesses based in their own state and investors that must be residents of that state to perhaps be able to do investing via the internet in this equity crowdfunding proposal. So again, 328, as I'm proposing it, would only be available to Minnesota-based companies. Anyone who would seek to invest must be a Minnesota resident. A business that would be advertising their business and their offerings could only do that to Minnesota residents. The offerings would be done through a portal, and these portals must be registered with the Department of Commerce. The one thing that would be new is that investment could be done by virtually anyone. So right now you have to be an accredited investor, and those standards are such that it's really only very wealthy and probably the 1% that are able to make investments. This really would allow those opportunities to be available to other Minnesotans to be able to make investments. We do limit the amount of investment an individual could make, $10,000, and also the amount of money that a company could raise through these offerings of $2 million and $5 million. There must be detailed disclosure information provided to investors and with audited statements. The funds must be held in escrow with an FDIC-insured account until the company reaches a minimum funding target within a time frame. If they do not, all of the money is returned to the investors. And again, the portals are subject to stringent record keeping and oversight by the Department of Commerce. So, as I mentioned, 14 states have passed something similar. Some of our neighboring states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, and then Texas and Washington State, among others, have done this. And I think it holds a really exciting new venue for, again, businesses of any type to try to raise funds using the internet and looking to really a new generation of investors that are very comfortable with that medium. We have many programs in Minnesota to try to encourage capital acquisitions to grow and build businesses in Minnesota, but many of them are organized around being high-tech businesses. This instrument really could be used by virtually any type of business, a local coffee shop in a rural area, or a bakery, or, as I mentioned, a craft brewery, other types of businesses that could be could really find the ability to raise some needed capital and to get a business going and grow jobs using MinVest. So with that, Mr. Chair, I have several testifiers today, Mr. Ryan Schildchrist and Zachary Robbins with the law firm of Winthrop and Weinstein, and they have really been instrumental in creating this proposal and bringing it forward and driving a lot of the support that the proposal has gained.
Well, thank you, Representative Loon. Let's go ahead and bring them up, and we'll jump right into it. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
If you could identify yourselves for the tape and then start whenever you're ready.
Yes, my name is Ryan Schildkraut. I'm a partner at Winthrop & Weinstein in Minneapolis. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and Representative Loon for having us here today.
Hi there. I'm Zach Robbins. I'm a colleague of Ryan's. Thank you so much for having us here.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. I just wanted to start kind of echoing on some of Representative Loom's comments and tell a little bit of the story of how we came to be involved in this issue. So Zach and I are both business attorneys. We're not lobbyists or part of our firm's government affairs team, so we're not here on behalf of any sort of client or benefactor. We're truly doing this pro bono because we work with small businesses and emerging companies every day, and we have firsthand exposure to the issues they face. The number one issue that we see day in, day out from our entrepreneurial clients is how to access capital they need to grow their businesses. I don't think that's a controversial topic. I mean, I think it's widely believed in bipartisan fashion that businesses in our state have a lot of are really struggling to access capital. In fact, I recently read an interview with the Lieutenant Governor where she echoed that same comment. She said the number one challenge small businesses are facing is how to access capital they need to grow. So why is it such a challenge for these small companies to find money? It really boils down to one big problem, and it's how do they find investors? For most entrepreneurs, this really is more of a challenge than you might imagine. The vast majority of entrepreneurs and clients we meet with are genuinely shocked to learn that our current laws prohibit them from advertising the fact that they're trying to raise money for their companies. The reason for that is the laws that we've had on the books for years and years allow companies to go out and ask friends and family to be investors, and recent laws allow them to advertise only to the wealthiest 1%, but for the vast majority of Minnesotans who they don't have a relationship with, they're prohibited from talking to them about investing in their company. Similarly, we think that regular Minnesotans are interested in supporting local businesses by investing in them, but the laws make it hard for them to learn about companies that are seeking investors. So what this bill is about, I mean, we use the word crowdfunding, and it's kind of a trendy buzzword, but all crowdfunding means is using the internet kind of as a matchmaking service. So companies who are looking for investors can find those investors using the internet, and vice versa, Minnesotans who might want to invest in an exciting, you know, startup company could use the internet to find those opportunities. Bottom line is, like I said, we meet with these people every day. They have great ideas and solid business plans, but they need investment to turn those plans into reality. We also know that there's billions of dollars on the sidelines ready to invest in the next generation of great Minnesota companies. Problem is that our current laws make it unnecessarily difficult, if not practically impossible, for these companies and investors to find each other. Congress has even agreed this is a problem that needs to be fixed. As Representative Loon mentioned, Congress in 2012 passed the Jobs Act, which kind of modernized the rules and would allow companies to engage in this sort of crowdfunding. Problem is Congress directed the SEC to come up with rules that the companies would have to follow. They gave the SEC 270 days to release their rules. It's now been over 1,000 days. We still don't have final rules. We've seen proposed rules that are kind of universally scoffed at by those in the industry who are experts in the field. The SEC itself has estimated that a company trying to raise $1 million could reasonably expect to incur about $250,000 to $350,000 in professional fees in order to comply with the SEC's own rules, which just makes it an impractical solution or alternative for most companies who are strapped for cash. The way I actually learned about this issue and came to be involved, as Representative Loon mentioned, is that I attended a craft beer conference last year. So I work with a lot of breweries in town, and that's how I've come to know Representative Loon for her work on the Surly Bill, which led to the explosion of the local craft beer industry. I've helped about 15 local craft breweries raise money from investors, but we've had to do it the old-fashioned way, which is we create a private placement memorandum, and we go out and we solicit investment from friends and family, but it's kind of all done in the shadows. No one can know about it. It has to be secret. What this bill does is brings it all out in the open on the internet. I think that sunshine is the best disinfectant, and by posting these documents on the internet for everyone to see, you actually reduce the risk of any kind of fraud. So anyways, I attended this conference. I learned that other states were frustrated with the lack of progress at the federal level and started passing their own laws, namely our neighbors in Wisconsin. So I came back from the conference, started asking around people in the business community, different trade groups, people that we work with in our government affairs team at Winthrop to find out if there was anything being done at the local level. Turns out there wasn't much of a push for anything, and Zach and I just took it upon ourselves thinking, well, let's just try writing the law and see what we can get it passed, and here we are. So with that in mind, I'll turn it over to Zach, and Zach's going to talk a little bit more of kind of the efforts we made and some of the support we've built in the business community.
Thank you. Mr. Robbins, if you could, again, identify yourself with the tape. I think we did, but or I think you did, but go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Just echoing what Ryan had discussed, we've been working hard on this topic for the past 9 or 10 months. We have a consortium of business groups throughout the state that have supported this topic, and I'm going to name some names right now, some of which are actually in the room today. This bill is supported by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, by the Black Chamber of Commerce, by the Life Science Alley, MHTA, Mojo, ACG, TIE, Small Business Minnesota, the Social Enterprise Alliance, the Metro Independent Business Association, the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, and many others who are identified on minvest.org. These groups represent constituents all across the spectrum, and so we're very proud to have many of these names on our list. What we're also proud of is the fact that this bill will help out companies across the entire state. It will not be Twin Cities-centric. In fact, I would contend that companies that are based, say, 2 hours west of here will actually be able to utilize this bill more so than someone based in the Twin Cities. Why? Because if you're based in the Twin Cities, you can probably, through one or two or three phone calls, maybe access an angel investor, someone who's savvy, who's worked with young companies or growing companies. The likelihood of finding those types of investors, perhaps the further out you go, might be more challenging. What this bill does is give companies that are located anywhere throughout the state the ability to raise capital from their friends, from their family, from people in the community who can support that business and have a vested interest in seeing that it succeeds. That's a very powerful concept. I'm just going to share two stats with you today. The first stat is, according to the Kauffman Foundation, 96% of all private capital goes to businesses led by white males. And the percentage that goes to women-led businesses is so small that the Kauffman Foundation doesn't even keep track of that statistic. The second data point that I'm going to refer to is venture capital seed stage investing in 2012 was averaging $2.8 million per company. In 2013 was $4.3 million. What does that mean? That means that professional institutional investors are going upstream and they're investing in later stage companies. What this does is it creates a void for younger companies, companies that are not at the level to obtain those funds. Furthermore, there is a regional bias where most of these funds goes towards Austin, Boston, Silicon Valley, NYC, etc. So, essentially, there are large swaths of the economy that are essentially foreclosed upon from trying to access capital, and that's what we're trying to change with this bill. We have met with the MSBA Securities Division and received input from about a dozen attorneys and have implemented all of their changes into the bill. We thank them for their assistance. We have met with the Department of Commerce 4 times over the last month and have made many changes throughout the bill. And we look forward to continuing to work with them. I know Peter is here today, and I think it's actually been a fantastic process. While not necessarily fun at all times, through compromise, I think we're creating a better bill in the end. Last thing that I'd like to add is that this bill has sailed through state houses across the country. It is one of the very rare bipartisan issues. And so, once again, we are thrilled to have the authors that we do have on the bill, bipartisan authors in both chambers. I'm going to hand it back to Ryan. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I was going to walk you through some of the key features of the bill, but I think Representative Lewin already touched on those at the beginning. So I'm happy to answer specific questions if now we have more testifiers. One thing I want to add is I brought this up earlier. We talked about crowdfunding. The word crowdfunding doesn't appear anywhere in this bill. This is merely just kind of an update to our securities laws to modernize them, and it's about letting businesses use the internet as I mentioned earlier, just to connect with people who might want to be investors.
I think you've done a nice job. I think Representative Loon did a nice job. And we do have one question from Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe the department could help out on this if Mr. Brickwitty could maybe come down.
Here he comes. Mr. Brickwitty, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, Peter Brickwitty from the Commerce Department.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Brickwitty, does the department support this bill?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, I have expansive comments, and I would echo much of what's been already said about the nature of the discussion so far. I would say that we've made a lot of progress over the last month in all of our meetings. I think we have some work to do before we're in a position to be able to support the bill in its current form.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Brickwitty, in its current form, where would the safeguards be for things in the securities world don't always go as one would wish? How's the enforcement in this bill?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, I'm happy to get into it. Mr. Chairman, I may ask to defer to perhaps some of the other testifiers. I wouldn't want to take up their time, but I'd be happy to answer the question in great length. I think there are a number of things that have in the Delete All Amendment that have gone towards improving the bill. I would say that the disclosure sections have always been strong and I think are improved here. We've added through some of our discussions the some disqualification for bad actors that would prohibit individuals who have otherwise been disqualified by the SEC to participate in securities offerings from participating in a crowdfunding situation. I think there are disclosures to the individual investors. I think there are still some issues that we'd like to work on. One, for example, would be when issuers are acting as their own portal operators, and I can get into that for members who aren't familiar with the terminology, but for someone who's doing their own offering through online, what the requirements are and the standards by which those issuers have to interact with the public and how they do that. I think there's kind of two objects there. One is to protect the company itself from potentially inadvertently running afoul of either state or federal securities registration requirements, and then also echoing Zach's comments, to provide transparency to potential investors so that there's a recorded conversation, if you will, between those investors who are looking to kick the tires of a business seeking to raise capital in their community and whether or not that's a good investment on their part and the company itself.
Thank Representative Davids.
Thank you.
Other questions, members? If not, Representative Applebaum.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for either Mr. Schildkraut or Mr. Robbins, but I suppose since Mr. Schildkraut's up there, I'll ask you. So my understanding is when the SEC released its proposed crowdfunding rules, which were discussed earlier and have been subject to a lot of controversy and very little action since the time they were proposed, the SEC itself estimated that a company seeking to raise $1 million in a crowdfunding offering like this bill would allow should expect to incur in between $250,000 and $350,000 in professional fees in order to comply with the proposed rules. And again, my understanding is that the Department of Commerce has suggested inserting many of these provisions into the bill, which they may have done with this amendment. But my question to you is, wouldn't this make MinVest cost prohibitive for a small emerging company with limited resources? And I guess a second question, if you wouldn't mind, is, you know, what would, if so, what's the point of creating an unusable system for small companies that really need access to capital?
Mr. Schildkraut.
Yes, Representative Applebaum, Mr. Chair, thanks for the question. That's a concern that I've had kind of the forefront of my mind in this entire 9-10 month process we've been working on this. We want to create something that's usable, recognizing that the consumer protection concerns are valid and are something that have to be addressed. So I think by being potentially the 15th state to adopt this, we're able to have the benefit of looking at what's worked and what hasn't worked in other states. And I really think we have been able to put together something that will be the best crowdfunding bill in the country. I think what we have to date is something that would be a very helpful tool to a lot of businesses. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that it's going to solve the crisis of small companies in Minnesota that need capital, but it will be a tremendously helpful tool. And I think the changes we've been able to make with the input from the Department of Commerce will help improve the consumer protection piece without rendering it so cost prohibitive the companies won't be able to use it. And on the issues where we still have some discussion negotiations with the department or we're unwilling to change our position, it's for that very reason that we think some of those changes will just make it cost prohibitive for the companies.
Representative Applebaum, you good?
I'm good. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Why don't we have our next testifier come up? Mr. Marshall Saunders. Mr. Saunders, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
If you could go ahead and say your name for the tape, please.
Sure.
Proceed.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Marshall Saunders. I'm the owner of Saunders Daily, LLC, saundersdaily.com. And I've been a residential real estate agent for 19 years. And for 6 years, I was the owner of RE/MAX Results, the third largest residential real estate brokerage in the state. I sold my interest last October to start this crowdfunding venture. So this is what I'm doing. And that's a little bit about me. I'm a strong believer in crowdfunding. I think that what I do is I go out and I buy income-producing properties, whether it be a 4-plex, 11-plex. We have a 33-unit building in Richfield that we're buying, a 36-unit in North Minneapolis, and a number of single-family homes. And I go out and I put those on my website. And right now I only cater that website to accredited investors. So the investor must be accredited. But then I take this investment and I say, you know what? Let's all do this together. Let's all participate in this. And it opens up a broader scope of investment. A lot of people who generally don't have the wherewithal to invest in real estate or on that level can then come participate via our website and our company. And it really opens up the world to a broader scope of investor in this stuff. You know, take a local example. If you go right down the street here to Summit Avenue or Grand Avenue, there's these beautiful, 1920s, 1930s, all brick buildings that are 7-plexes and 11-unit apartment buildings, and they're really beautiful. And a lot of people in the neighborhood say, you know, I'd really like to own a building like that. But when they go to buy them, they're, $1.5 or $2 million. And so they're going to be commercial financing. And so a person who buys it will have to bring at least $400,000, $700,000 to the table. And thus, very, very few regular people can buy that. My system allows us to say, how about instead of having, one person bring $700,000, let's have 7 people bring $100,000, or 14 people bring $50,000, or 28 people bring $25,000. It allows them to then participate and then drive by and say, I own part of that building. That I live in this community, and I own part of that building. If you look at the tax rolls right now, a lot of the people that own those are REITs that are in other states, wealthy individuals, nothing against other states, but, live in Florida and Texas and California. They're not owned local. And this allows us to own more stuff in our communities and keep a lot of this investment within the state of Minnesota. And, I also have a strong belief. I've been in residential real estate, and I bought my brokerage about 3 months before Bear Stearns collapsed in 2008. Really great time to buy a real estate brokerage. And it was a difficult time. And I've lived through the kind of the difficult period. And I believe that one of the factors that went into the immense financial crisis that we had is the distance between an investment and the people that held the investment. The distance between the risk and the people that own the risk. And a lot of times there was mortgages that were being packaged and repackaged and packaged and repackaged. And by the time the person in New York City who owned, you know, a hedge fund that owned one millionth of this portion of this debt, they had no idea what they really owned. By bringing investment to a more local level and bringing it to more a doable level for the average citizen, it brings the risk and the person who owns the risk much closer together. The person who owns the risk drives by it, you know, sometimes as much as 10 times a day. They know if it's being kept up. They know if people being loitering outside. I think it brings a better angle to investment that could have benefits to everyone. Ultimately, and this is a technological thing, I think this is why the internet exists. The internet exists to reach billions of people all at once and harness the power of people working together. That's how this whole thing started, as crowdsourcing. When they had problems with computer programs, they'd put it out on the internet. Millions of people would look at it, and over the course of a day, something that had stumped programmers for months and months and months could be solved. I think this is why the internet exists. It doesn't necessarily exist to debate whether a dress is white and gold versus black and blue. That's not why the internet exists. It exists to do stuff like this.
Yeah. No questions.
I think it's white and gold, personally. But anyway, that's all I have to say. If you have some questions,
questions, members. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you're talking, I'm beginning to think of the investor that invests the $25,000 to own a piece of, a house that has several units, and all of a sudden they have need to access that $25,000. Mm-hmm. How liquid is this type of investment? What are, you know, I mean, does each crowdsourcing investment have different terms, different conditions? What is there any uniformity that you're talking about, or is it just pretty much the wild, wild west, and that's what we get?
Mr. Saunders.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, I think it would have different relationship with investors depending on what the investment was. Since I have real estate, and my particular company is located on real estate, we're very, very clear in our perspectives. Like, this isn't very liquid, and you should know that going into this. This is kind of like you just going out and buying this real estate. We're doing it as a group, but just because you only own a small portion of the real estate, it kind of gives you the same lack of flexibility as if you own the entire piece of real estate. Now, every one of our investments is put into an LLC, and there are shares of that LLC. So that person could go out and sell their shares of that LLC if there was a secondary market for that or an interested buyer. But it doesn't have a lot of liquidity when it comes to real estate investing on our part. We sell our investments in 7 to 10 years. We're very clear about that in our PPMs and our private placement memorandums and so on. And so when we seek investors, we kind of double check. Are you sure that you're in this for 7 to 10 years? Because it's not that great of a thing. Now, if there's an unusual circumstance, we have a number of investors kind of lined up that would certainly take their place or buy them out if need be. But that's how we run that. But I get that question. Every investor asks me about that immediately. What's the level of liquidity? What's my long-term? What's the out strategy? You know, where is this going to go? They need some sort of strategy as to when they get their money back and how they make it back.
Thank you, Mr. Saunders. Other questions, members? Seeing none, let's have Mr. Thank you, Mr. Saunders, for your testimony. Let's have Mr. Steve Comer is next on the list. Mr. Comer, welcome to the committee. Please
Thank
identify
you.
Yourself for the record and start whenever you're prepared.
My name is Steve Comer. A little background. I spent all 61 years of my life in Minnetonka. and went to the University of Minnesota and was fortunate enough to play on a baseball team that allowed me to carry that on for 12 years of professional baseball. During that 12 years, I created a startup, and 28 years later, I sold it. Raised three daughters because of that, and because of that, I also got a nice feel for being an entrepreneur. And I think that's what this crowdfunding is about, is how do we get money or the opportunity to get money to entrepreneurs. Currently, I'm a co-founder of another startup company, Lumilight. We manufacture electroluminescent lighting, basically a sheet of light. It's the same product that I made in my previous company, one of the products I made, and now I'm taking it out and expanding it out in a different form. My co-founder is Lori Anderson, and this is to Zach's point. As an entrepreneur, I'm sure I might be speaking to the choir to some of you, but she's the president, and females actually own the majority of the shares of Lumilight. Another point that he made it is that our facility is outside of the metro area. Our facility is in Austin, Minnesota. And what we've tried to do, I'm going to give you just a little bit of background, try and be quick as I can, is we started in 2011. Owners, founders put in about $100,000 to get the business plan going, to meet with other professionals to see if we had a viable business. We got the go-ahead after paying our bills, and we started the company, and we thought our assumption was we needed to raise about $500,000. So first opportunity was to go to friends and family. Talk to friends and families, but we weren't going to be able to raise the $500,000, so we went to banks. And as a startup company, I think you all know that they don't really deal with a startup company that doesn't have 2 years and 2 years financials and hopefully the second year you're profitable. But we did find three banks. And these three banks said that if you raise money, we will, and if you raise the money to buy equipment, we will fund some of the collateral on that equipment. We raised the money, went back to the three banks, and they all said, we took it to our loan committee. You're a startup company, we can't loan you the $100,000, $200,000 that we would have needed to get the $500,000, which is what our startup costs were going to be. So from there, we, since the banks weren't able to do anything, we did get the equipment, and so we went on to a leasing company. The leasing company agreed to loan us $90,000 on $225,000 worth of equipment, a little bit different than the banks that we had been told about. So and then with this money, we started to do production. And we got our proof of concept, and we got to the point where now we're going to bring this to market. We're going to need to raise another $500,000 to bring our product and other products to market. As we did that, we entered the Angel Network in the metropolitan area. And Angel Pollination, Twin City Angels, Gopher Angels. We ended up going with Minnesota Angel Network. And through the course of several months, we became certified through them. And then over the next year, we went to 12 to 15 presentations, anywhere from 7 minutes to 10 minutes to tell them our story and to show them our product. In the ones in the metropolitan area, I should say, we recognize the same people at pretty much every one of these. When we went outstate, we realized that we weren't really meeting the right people because word of mouth had not gotten out that there was a meeting going on. So we were kind of we're caught in between of how we're going to raise money by doing this angel networking. Fortunately, we were in a show, we did a presentation in Owatonna, and the city of Austin and the DCA of Austin put together a proposal to bring our company from Plymouth down to Austin. The proposal was for $450,000. So we started to move all our equipment down, proceeded to clean out the old Glenn Taylor building that had sat for 3 years. Three months into it, the funding came in instead of the $450,000 package. One of the entities pulled out, and we ended up getting $300,000. Of that $300,000, the leasing company back in Plymouth, we were moving to Austin. They said, we don't want you to take the loan down to Plymouth. You're going to have to pay it back. So we had to take some of the $300,000 to pay the $70,000 back that we owed for that leasing company. But we persevered. We started to produce product in Austin and then ran out of funds. So we went to crowdfunding. We looked up Kickstarter, put together a video and all the information that you need to do for Kickstarter, and got the answer that we didn't really fit their model. It wasn't something that a manufacturer of electroluminescent and lighting, or as our product was, a fully lit retractable display, did not fit with what they thought their crowdfunding model was. So we gathered as much money as we could to get to a show in March of 2013, and we brought our product to the show. We were named Product of the Year. 6 months later, we got our orders for $1.6 million, based on the proof of our concept and sending the product out. So back to family and friends and seeking more money, we raised another $100,000. So if you've been scoring this so far, we're about $400,000 under what we wanted or we needed to get to this position. And if we had that money, we would have already produced the $1.6 million in sales, plus gathered more sales. We certified for the Minnesota Angel Tax Credit in 2014. We just didn't raise enough money for those people to use it. And by the time we did raise the money, it was gone. So then all through this time, we've been talking to strategic partners, print companies, suppliers of materials for us. Is there any way that you can help fund our company and then in short term be paid back based on our products being delivered? We're still talking and we're still looking. We've had letter of credits for up to $50,000. We've raised $10,000 out of those multiple letters of credit. We've gone back to the banks with the purchase orders and some of the revenue that we've generated. And we can't get funding now because we're still considered a startup. But now the founders, me and Lori, our personal finances are a risk for the bank. So then we met with Zach and Brian and talked about crowdfunding. So we've been doing the crowdfunding, and now right now we're applying to more of a business funding, crowdfunding, which is equity net fundable. We're in the process of putting together our application for that. We've also talked to a number of people about factoring. Factoring the POs, factoring invoices, factoring inventory, and we're in conversations with those people right now, just not going anywhere fast enough. So when they told me to come and talk, I thought I would just kind of give you, this is really just a short glimpse of what we've been through, but if this crowdfunding comes through, my opinion is there is a security issue, no doubt, if you're talking about grandmother's money. But with what we've seen in our presentations, we don't get to see, I don't even think we're seeing 1% of 1% of 1%. And we think we have a product that people would be proud of. We want to stay in Minnesota. We want to hire people in Minnesota. And we want to have investment money coming back to Minnesota. But we are forced right now to look outside the region. I will be leaving 2 days from now for Indiana to see if that's a place that will be acceptable for our product. Quite simply, Aluminolite, we are a solid company, got innovative products, we just don't have the money. And as I said before, we're just looking for more tools in order to find that money. Thank you for having me. If you have any questions, short answer.
Mr. Comer, nice job. Representative Atkins has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the testifier for sharing. This is not the easiest thing to do. You're obviously a confident guy, and I appreciate that, but I also understand that, you know, laying all this out, it's like an episode of Shark Tank. I'm waiting for you to make the pitch for a 30% stake. Well, you know, here's what your ask is. I'm going to ask you the hard question, though, and you raised it. Why would we allow, and by the way, I'm the second author, and I was already having this drafted before the lawyer guys came wandering through, and I appreciate all their efforts. They've done a nice job. But why, if sophisticated bank lenders, sophisticated VC folks won't take a flyer on, why should we let grandma? Those folks have lots of money to lose, and they're not willing to risk it on you. Why should we let grandma, who's not as sophisticated as the VC crowd or the standard bank lender? I've talked long enough. I'm trying to give you an opportunity to formulate what your answer is, but why?
Mr. Comer, would this be Grandma Dot or Grandma Frank? Go ahead and, sorry, I shouldn't prejudice that.
Mr. Comer. It's not my rich grandmother, that's for sure. So.
Right.
To answer your questions, why wouldn't they? Number one is, I think the limits that this crowdfunding puts on Grandma. I don't know if that $10,000 is going to put her off, but I think her family could help her make smart decisions. But I think in our case, why haven't smart people? Well, when we came out in 2011 through 13, I believe that bad timing for angel investors, especially in Minnesota. One thing we heard a lot of times, I can't tell you how many times, is I've got some things that are going through 2008, 2009 where it was very dire for a lot of these investors, is that most of their money was going back into those entities to see if they could salvage that. Second thing that I would say is that the amount of money that we're looking for doesn't fit a lot of portfolios of people. It's bang for your buck. If I put, in fact, I'll give you an example about the attorneys that we used. Great Plant Mooney put together a PPM for us, and our valuation was $1.4 million. And the reason they did that is so they can put together, one reason is to help us. But the other reason is $1 million makes sense probably for the partners to put in their effort. Am I right? Okay. So our amount that we've been looking for, $500,000, $200,000, and that is something that was satisfied primarily by friends and family. It's just that the process of developing a product and getting it out is expensive. More expensive than it was when I started back the other company in 81. So that's the second thing. The third thing is, the money that is in Minnesota or in the metro, I believe it's earmarked for medical device, medical tech, healthcare, information systems. I'm not sure how much of it is out there for a manufacturing company with a new product that's going to go into exhibits, signage, and that. So I guess those are three reasons why. Why would we do this? And the other reason is because there's a lot of people in Minnesota that have enough money, but they can't get access. And I've been fortunate enough to access a company or be able to build a company, and I understand what that lifestyle is like.
Thank you, Mr. Comer. Representative Atkins, good question. Follow. Seeing no other questions, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifier. I'm watching your slick little video right here now. I believe this is your product. It's pretty neat. Suggest that everybody takes a peek at it.
And yeah, appreciate it.
It's pretty awesome. So
we were concentrating on the testimony we were all going to watch later.
But. Sorry.
can you make that into a campaign sign, maybe?
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Thank you, Mr. Comer. Ms. Cadoon, if you want to come down, and we'll hear from the chamber. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 2,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. We want to make sure businesses are able to start here, grow here, thrive here. And what you've heard and what we've heard as well is access to capital. It can be an impediment to both of those, two of those issues of starting here and growing here. We hear that, and you heard testimony on that. This would be one tool that could be used successfully, we believe. It's certainly not going to solve all access to capital issues, but it is certainly a tool that's been used in other states. I think 15 was mentioned. I think they did a very nice job of really looking at the best practices in those other states and putting together a bill that does balance that need of protecting the consumer and the investor with the caps that they put in place, the notifications in those provisions, as well as making sure that it's not so overly burdensome and costly to those small businesses that need to raise that capital. So we are definitely in support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I come from a banking family, and when you take a look at funding like this, I believe the the changes in regulation, whether you agree with them or not, does change the landscape, and different lender or different banks are certified different ways. You've got corporate lenders, you've got community banks, you've got credit unions. And my father was in banking and had said oftentimes it was frustrating to him that he felt like the regulations were set up that he wasn't allowed to borrow money to people that actually needed it. And it created some challenges. I think the reality out there is that just like regulations, there are people that fall through the cracks that are very, very good risks, but through the filter of regulations, they don't pass through. There are investors that don't belong in this enterprise, and there are investors that uniquely, absolutely belong in this. And so I see this as a portal to put person A with person B, with everyone understanding the risk that's involved.
Thank you, Representative Luna. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Mr. Brickwitty to come back down. I've got a couple of questions for him. And as he's making his way down, Representative Lunan said that his family was in the banking industry. I just wonder if you brought any samples for the committee.
negative.
They're on a roll today.
Wow. Mr. Brickwitty, I know you were going to have, you had more comments you said earlier, so maybe what we want to do is if you want to just go ahead with your comments, that might answer some of Representative O'Driscoll's questions. If not, we'll get to those at the end.
Mr. Chairman, again, Peter Brickwitty from the Commerce Department, happy to do that, and I'll be brief. I want to thank Representative Loon, and quite candidly, I would be remiss in not thanking the authors and the other body as well for helping to facilitate the conversation.
Wait, I'm sorry, what did you just say?
Mr. Chairman, I rarely would ever in either chamber reference the other, so my apologies. But I do feel it is appropriate in this case because there has been a bipartisan effort to communicate, and I would echo the earlier comments that the conversations have been good. They've been productive. There's been a frank and candid exchange of views. As I said earlier, I don't think we are done with that conversation. We still have a couple of outstanding concerns before we're going to be in a position at the Commerce Department to be able to support the bill. But I do want to extend my thanks to Representative Loon for helping facilitate those conversations and for them to continue. As I mentioned, we have a couple of remaining issues, and let me go through them very quickly. One that I mentioned earlier in response to Representative David's question, we'd like to continue to have the conversation about the requirements for what will occur when an investor is serving as a portal operator. That is, that the investor is making the offering directly to, the issuer is making the offering directly to consumers through their own website. And making sure that that conversation is transparent and everyone is protected from potential inadvertent securities violations. So that's one. Two, I think, is a technical drafting issue in the Delete All Amendment. In the last section, there is some bad actor disqualifications, which are copied, I think, verbatim from the SEC bad actor disqualifications, and we feel like it is prudent that if, in the event that a bad actor is otherwise disqualified by a state regulator, that they'd also be disqualified here. And I think we have general agreement on that, and that's just a technical issue that we can work on going forward. The two major outstanding issues for the department, however, are the limits in the bill, both the overall offering limits and the investor cap. The overall limits of $2 million and $5 million mimic a bifurcation that many other states have employed. However, in the department's view, we feel that they are too high. No other state that has passed a similar law to date has gone above $2 million as an upper limit, and the federal draft regulation is at $1 million. Further, the $10,000 individual investor cap, we believe, is also too high. We've had some, in response to Representative Atkins' question, I think we heard kind of that balance point, and that's what we're seeking, which is opening up the opportunity, the potential that this proposal has to allow small startup businesses and businesses that have gotten past the startup phase and are seeking a second round of capital to access capital in their community, but at the same time make sure that our most vulnerable citizens are protected in the event that there is fraud and abuse of the system. Because while the wide accessibility and the ease of use of a crowdfunding system are some of its key features, We also have concerns that without proper controls, that it could be also susceptible to widespread financial abuse and fraud. And so perhaps I'll stop there. I think, if I could summarize, I think we've made progress. We're headed in the right direction. I think we have more work to do before we have full consensus, but I'm happy to answer questions from members.
Representative O'Driscoll, did you get your questions answered there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There were a couple of follow-ups. You did a nice job of providing some a roadmap for what's the concern to the department as it relates to the securities on this. I look at this as e-syndication. And I know that Commerce regulates syndication, and there's some pretty specific laws in Minnesota that deal with this. Do you have any concerns with an e-syndication concept versus...
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Driscoll, I tried my best to read your mind and didn't get fully all the way there, so could you perhaps elaborate a little bit on e-syndication?
Representative O'Driscoll.
In the state of Minnesota, what you need to be regulated in order to sell syndications through some FINRA registration or other. And this is an e-syndication. So how are we doing this as a private placement, or how are you providing regulatory oversight for Minnesotans?
Certainly. Mr. Brickwood.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, thanks for that clarification. I think there are there's two layers of regulatory review. So let me sort of unpack that. The first is on the offering itself. The Commerce Department, as you know, is the securities regulator, and so there are provisions in the bill for how the offering itself would have to be structured and how it would have to be filed with the department for review. Separately, there's also the issue of the portal operators, and the portal is the internet-based platform through which equity crowdfunding offering would be made. And so the bill also contemplates regulatory review of that portal and making sure that it complies with all of the regulations in the state. The legislature, a couple of sessions ago, required registration of internet portals domiciled in Minnesota. The bill provides for a form for that to take place, and there's some rulemaking authority for the department to help further delineate that. But there's sort of that's the two layers, and I think where our primary concern and one of the points that we've spent the most time in our conversations with the advocates on is the department feels strongly that an intermediary provides significant value both to the issuer and to the general investing public. Our initial position had been that we felt that a registered broker-dealer would be the would be good to have that specified. However, in the course of the conversation, I think we've compromised on that issue and recognized that broker-dealers may be a prohibition to this coming into actual use in Minnesota. And so we've had, I think, good conversations about whether or not an intermediary is used and how that helps the process. But if there is going to be an issuer offering, doing an offering as their own portal operator, what the requirements that issuer would be like and whether or not they should have a slightly elevated standard in order to make sure that things are transparent to the investors or potential investors, as well as not creating any of the transactional costs or significant transactional costs, to Representative Applebaum's earlier point, that would make this cost prohibitive for the company seeking to do the offering.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Brickwood, I'm hoping that the next couple of answers can have maybe a little bit more of a executive summary to them than the full on this. So the Patriot Act, as that has come into place, requires that financial institutions and other kinds of investments collect a lot more data on people and verification of information. How is the department going to be able to provide that verification so that we don't have fraud? And then I'll add the second part of that question. We also have OFAC requirements. How are we going to be able to verify that we don't have persons coming from offshore or persons that would be deemed not friendly to U.S. interests that may participate in something like this?
Mr. Brickwood.
Mr. Chairman and Representative O'Driscoll, I think defer to Representative Loon or to the advocates, but by way of summary, I think the delete all amendment addresses, I think, both of those concerns and places the burden for making sure that those issues are clarified, the OFAC list in particular, on the issuer rather than the department.
Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, yes, that's true. The delete all amendment did address both of those things, and so the escrow agent holding the funds would have to verify the parties are not on the OFAC list, and they would also have to collect information the portal operator would, consistent with the Patriot Act.
Good. Other questions, members? Mr. Brickwitty, I had one quick question, and your comments about the $5 million, the $2 million, I mean, those numbers I think are all negotiable. They seem okay to me, but the other one on line 3.15 on page 3, I'm personally about $9,600 short of meeting this investment threshold, but the $10,000 seems pretty reasonable. I mean, that does not strike me as being a large amount of money. Is that... I mean, that's just my reaction. I don't know to your comment on that. Do you have a response for that?
Mr. Chairman, I do, and thank you for that question. I think our concern is not with, I think, the businesses that you've heard from today or from many of the potential businesses in our communities across Minnesota that are going to utilize this platform in a legitimate way, but rather our concern is opening up the good things of this bill to potential fraud and abuse and what that looks like for consumers in Minnesota. The median income for Minnesotans is $61,000 approximately, just over $61,000. And so at a $10,000 cap for the average Minnesotan who we are trying to open this up to, that's a very significant portion of their average income in a year. And particularly when you're looking at a household, and most of the households in Minnesota are below that median income level, there's potentially significant risk if, say, a senior citizen or someone on a fixed income were solicited by a fraudulent actor, which the bill does give the department the authority to go after, but once that money is gone, we know that it's very difficult to recover at that point. So that's our concern with the $10,000 limit. We've had, I think, a very good exchange of views about from the advocates about why they feel $10,000 is appropriate, and we've committed to continue to discuss that as the bill moves forward.
Representative Atkins.
On that point, Mr. Chair, thank you. Is there a, and I tried getting through the delete all and didn't see it, but maybe it's in here. Is there a household cap? Because I was just thinking, I mean, if the Atkins family, for example, wanted to take $10,000 a pop, we could put $50,000 in. I guess all my kids are adults, so we could put $50,000 in. Is that something that other states have, or is there a cap for Representative Loon?
Representative Loon or...
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, there is not a household cap in the bill, but I'd have to ask Mr. Schildkraut or
okay, never mind. Let's not ask too many more questions
then. In another state, I don't know.
And
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, and I tell a quick, very quick story. I like to go mountain biking every once in a while. In fact, I went with Representative Lilly a while back. He's kind of a nut and takes a lot more risks than I would ever take. My concern about the bill, and again, I'm the second author. I like it. I think it's a neat approach. But Mr. Brickwitty summed up what my big concern is I want to make sure that there's the guardrails on it, too, so that just because somebody else, especially when you're talking about, and I'm guessing anybody who's ever started a business like I have and have had the good fortune of succeeding will tell you that most fail. I don't even know what the numbers are. It's probably in the 90-plus percent that don't succeed. And when you're taking somebody else along for the ride, what you expose them to is what has me concerned. And I don't know what that magic figure is, but just as I was sitting here, I thought perhaps one of the guardrails is the amount per household, because I'm guessing if you've gotten Joe Atkins intrigued enough to invest, you probably got Julia, and maybe Julia that gets John, Tom, and Katie, and pretty soon we've got $50,000, which isn't a big amount for, you know, Representative Davids and I. I mean, that's just throwaway money walking around, but for the hoppies, you know, it's just... I want to, my bottom line, and I know at this point I think we've heard from the testifiers, I want the bill to continue to move. I'm the second author. I've been working on it for a number of months, and I appreciate Representative Loon carrying it and doing a great job with it. But I do want to make sure that we've drawn some guardrails. I know that I heard directly from the commissioner himself about this figure as being one of the concerns that he had, because when you start multiplying this times two or three or four or five, family members, you're potentially talking about a very, very significant amount of money invested in an entity that has a 60, 70, 80, 90% chance of failure. So I want to make sure that we're not having a hearing 2 years from now or 3 years from now where we're reining this back in or it's been abused or fraudsters have come in and targeted Minnesota like they have I think we're the number one target for fraud among our seniors anywhere in the country. So when we launch this, let's do it in the right way and make sure that it's going to succeed. That's all I got to say, and thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Not seeing any other questions. Is there anybody else that wanted to come and testify for or against the bill? Seeing nobody, Representative Loon will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee for, I think, a good discussion. I want to thank Representative Atkins and Applebaum and Hoppe and Anderson, many others. This is, truly has been a bipartisan effort. I want to thank Mr. Schildkraut and Robbins for lots and lots of just pro bono hours. I don't know if you've calculated, but I'm encouraged by the discussions with the Department of Commerce. Clearly, there's still a couple of outstanding issues there that we may be able to bridge. But I think, again, with the understanding and with the disclosures in the bill that potential investors would receive, that understanding that you're not putting your money in a bank account, there is some risk in investing in any business venture, that this could be a tool that would help small businesses get the capital they need to move forward and be hopefully successful. So I thank the committee, and I would appreciate your continued comments and support.
Thank you, Representative Loon. With that, Representative Loon renews her motion that House File 328 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. As amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Loon and members. Representative Atkins, you want to go next?
Yeah,
one of us has got to go. I don't disagree.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House File 1185 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Is that
I believe so, Representative Atkins. That's my plan for this bill and the next one, that they both go to the very fair chair of the Tax Committee. With that, Representative Atkins has moved the bill in front of us. If you want to go ahead and explain or have Mr. Lund start, whatever your preference is.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make 30 seconds worth of comments and then turn it over to my much more erudite companion here who's going to walk you through the nature of it. 36%. If you remember nothing else today from this bill, remember the figure 36%. I can't find, and I challenge the tax chair right now, Representative Davids, Chairman Davids, I don't believe there is any higher tax rate in the Minnesota tax code than what we apply to charitable gaming organizations in Minnesota. If anybody can find one, I'd be interested because I'd like to cut that tax rate too. What this does is it cuts the tax rates that are applicable to charitable gambling organizations in half. If there was ever a time to do this, we've talked about it on both sides of the aisle. I think I've probably heard from, well, perhaps not the freshman, but I think just about everybody in here, when these bills have come before the committee, have said we overtax our charitable gambling organizations to the point where they are almost paying as much in taxes as is going towards the charitable purpose that they set out to serve. So this is your local hockey groups, your Rotary, your American Legion, or your VFW. And they're spending as much money on the taxes that they pay to the state of Minnesota as they are towards the mission that they're, whether it's the hockey team or the arena or whatever they're trying to do. So I would appreciate your support. I would hope that if there was ever a better time, I don't know when it is, but this is the time to do it. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Lund, who you all know very well.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Mr. Lund, please identify yourself for the record and jump right in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Alan Lund, Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. And I would echo everything that Representative Atkins said. And I would also point out that that 36% rate is what we pay without the ability to deduct any of our expenses. And so the average charity in Minnesota, it is about a one-to-one, $1 to mission, $1 to the state. The charities that pay the 36% rate in a given fiscal year, they are paying more to the state than they get to the bottom line for their missions. This bill would help all charities. It would be a tremendous relief, and it would allow us to do so much more in our local communities. We would ask for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. Members, any questions? Seeing none, is there anybody in the audience that wants to come down and testify for or against the bill? Not seeing anybody rushing down. Representative Atkins will renew his motion that House File... Hang on one 1185 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thanks. Thank you, Representative Chairman. Atkins. Mr. Lund, why don't you stay there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill takes a little different tact on skinning the same cat. The things that we were looking at in this bill is the ability to deduct compensation, wages, and taxes before figuring our tax liability. The raises the current trigger levels. Instead of cutting the rates, the 9, the 18, 27, and the 36, this bill would raise the trigger levels that charities would have to hit before paying those increased tax rates. Electronic pull tabs, or excuse me, electronic linked bingo, when it was initiated, was put in the combined receipts rates, and that has been a barrier to entry for charities. Traditional bingo is taxed at 8.5%, and what we believe would happen if the electronic linked bingo was moved to the traditional 8.5 rate, that it would provide an incentive for charities to look at that as another tool to raise money for their missions. We are also looking for the first $50,000 in a fiscal year to be tax-free, the same as as the exempt organizations are today. All of the exempt organizations do not hold a gambling license but are allowed to raise money for their charities, they have $50,000 that they pay no taxes on. We think that's a marvelous idea. And there is also a provision here about the outside annual audit. And we've now, some concerns have come to us on that, and we actually have a question on how the figuring of the revenue and the gross and the net that we're working. We've talked with council today, with chair, author of the bill, and we will be working to resolve that issue to everyone's satisfaction. Charities are not looking to remove themselves from an annual audit. We just believe that we should be treated as all other nonprofits, and we should all be on the same level playing field.
And Mr. Chair and members, as Mr. Lund said, we had a number of discussions today about that issue. And I think that Mr. Fragnito from the CPAs and Mr. Lund and others that were consulted outside of here, I think we agreed that the best way to handle that is to send it to the tax committee and let them deal with the tax issue. And everybody is pledged to keep working on it to make sure that we have all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed.
Just from a technical perspective, Representative Hoppe, Chair Hoppe, might have been out of mic range, and he did move that House File 1176 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes before our first testifier did testify. And so just for the record, we do have the bill before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And there's anything else from Chair Hoppe? We do have a question from Representative Davids. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Lund, we have House File 1176 before us. We just heard another refined piece of legislation, House File 1185, I believe.
Right? Yes.
Which one do you prefer?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Mr. Chair?
Is anybody else picturing Solomon holding a sword over the baby right now?
Mr. Lund, inquiring minds want to know.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Davids. 1176 is ACM-sponsored legislation. 1185 was brought forward by a Representative Atkins, who is a long-term supporter of charitable gambling. And at issue was how to kind of skin this cat. And we had some things. While tax relief is extremely important to us, we believe that getting the link bingo move, getting the $50,000, were also important. And so we each have this bill. The ACM-sponsored legislation is 1176, but we sincerely appreciate and think that 1185 is also a very fine bill.
Representative Davids, I heard he loves both of his children.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other follow-ups, Representative Davids? Members, any other questions on House File 1176? Anyone from the audience wishing to testify on House File 1176? Seeing no one, Representative Hoppe will give you the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd appreciate your support.
Representative Hoppe renews his motion that House File 1176 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. There being no other business before the committee, Mr. Chair, any other comments for the committee before we adjourn for the day?
I think we're done. We'll see you all tomorrow for Liquor Day, part one.
We are.